There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Annie Chin.
Hi, Shannon.
We're back doing these four walls.
This feels great. We're back.
I know,
reunited.
It's been a while, right?
Have you missed me?
I've missed you. I mean, I've seen you a bit on the magazine, but I have missed you in podcast
form. I know,
form.
We can't deny that we actually sit next to each other, so you can't have missed me that much. But you've missed me a bit. You've missed seeing my face behind this microphone.
Yeah, I've missed seeing your face obscured by a big black microphone, for sure. But I mean, we're back for season two. Season two, that's exciting, isn't it?
I know. We're going to be as big as the OC.
It's like Stranger
Things. Seasons like Stranger Things. Wow, we're claiming it.
So for season two, to kick off, we thought we'd do something really exciting. So Annie, why don't you tell everyone where we are?
I know, we're not in the ASOS office. I don't know if you can hear, but it's quite noisy because there's a bit of a buzz going on. We're at Women of the World Festival at the South Bank Centre in London.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing all sorts of things. We're going to play you some of the talks, we're going to interview people, we're going to go to panels.
Yeah, we're going to go around and we're going to grab some people to talk to. There's so many interesting people down here. So Shannon, should we get on with it?
Yeah,
let's go. You can't say let's go to the fashion cupboard.
No, let's go find someone to talk to us about Women of the World, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've managed to grab Bea Colley. Can you tell us a little bit about what your role is here?
Yeah, so my name's Bea. I'm a participation producer at South Bank Centre. So that means that I programme events across the whole of the site, so that could be indoors or outdoors. My work is mainly about bringing in people who might not ordinarily access what we do here at South Bank Centre.
And specifically about WOW, why we're here today, can you tell us a little bit about what the festival is and the history behind it?
Yes, so Women of the World Festival was set up 7 years ago by Jude Kelly, who is our artistic director here at South Bank. She was having lots of conversations at the time around why there was still a need for feminism, despite the fact that there had been so many years of fighting for equal pay, fighting for different things.
Yeah.
We still weren't quite there. So she felt that there was the need to set up a festival to explore some of those ideas. It was the centenary of International Women's Day, and so Jude decided at that point she wanted to set up the festival. There are now WOW festivals in 20 cities over 5 continents.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, wow.
And this weekend alone, as well as having the WOW festival in London, the kind of mothership festival, yeah, we have a WOW festival in Hull, so the capital of culture this
yeah
year. And we also had the first WOW in Finland this year as well.
And there's so much going on right here. We've just been walking around and there's a market over there, loads of talks and panels. What specifically, in your opinion, what's so great about Women of the World Festival?
Well, I don't want to get too negative, but I think that the festival is still definitely needed. There's still a massive gender pay gap. We recently received a study by Girl Guiding UK, and they found this amazing statistic that 69% of girls aged 7 to 21 felt that they weren't good enough. So all of these things coalescing, and the fact that we have world leaders who are legitimising misogyny and sexism, we here at WOW Festival and all of our partners and artists feel that it's still very much needed.
So the festival is happening over the course of however many days at the moment, but if people want to get involved or hear about things that are happening, say, post the festival, how can they do that?
So we are going to be filming some of our major talks here at WOW. So on Saturday, we also have the incredible African-American civil rights activist, Angela Davis.
So excited about that one.
Very excited.
You know, I think we could have sold out Royal Festival Hall three times over.
Yeah. We know a lot of people haggling tickets on that one.
We are actually live streaming that to a different room in the building, so if anybody's here, they can come and see it. But it's that idea of, you know, what this year has sparked. People are really excited about activism. So Angela Davis, and we also have Chimamanda Adichie, the author. So those two talks will be filmed, and they will be put on our website after WOW. In addition to that, we'd love people to visit the South Bank Centre and WOW websites. We are programming WOW throughout the year. This year we have WOWs in lots of different places, so as well as Bradford this year, we also have one in Chester, in Exeter, in Perth, as well as the Bradford Festival. So we're constantly programming, we're constantly looking for ideas, for partners, for amazing organisations campaigning for women's rights. So please do look at our website. We also do a really interesting thing at South Bank Centre called Thinkins.
So I've read about where people can get involved and sort of suggest what they want to see as part of the programme as well.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of offering the floor out to different people who might have different ideas of what they'd like to see in WOW, because, you know, we're a small programming team and we can't possibly know everything that everybody would like to see. So we'd love to invite people to take part in Thinkins and just to get in touch through the website, to send us ideas. It really is the partners that makes WOW what it is.
Bea, you've got us super excited now for WOW, so we're going to go off and see some talks. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much for talking to us, Bea.
Thank you.
So that was Bea. I'm really excited now about what's coming up over the weekend.
I know, it's going to be so fun.
She's given us loads of tips about what to expect. So basically, we're going to go around and try and grab a few people to speak to after their panel talks, their performances. I think there's a couple of poetry performances that we want to speak to the people doing that. So yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, we should have loads of interviews. And we're also going to be speaking to people in the crowd, people who've turned up today, tomorrow. And we're just going to be asking them, who's their Women of the World? Okay, so we've stumbled across an amazing zine stand. Can you introduce yourself and tell us what you're up to?
Of course, yeah. So my name is Nelly Rose, and I'm a designer doing mainly women's wear and textiles. But we are doing Globel, which is a new project providing kind of a platform for global connectivity between women. So today at WOW Festival, we're inviting people to come and draw themselves as a paper doll. And we're going to make one long connecting zine, which will be available, and you can search it at Global Zine.
So cool. Okay, we're asking everyone we come across today who their kind of, basically who your Women of the World is. So whether that's someone who's kind of been a mentor figure or a friend or someone who's speaking maybe across the weekend, who's a woman that you can talk about who you just think is amazing?
Two people. I would say firstly is my mum, who has brought me up, and I'm sure a lot of people say this because it makes you aware of the strength of what one person can do. But also Meryl Streep, because I think she is an absolute badass and uses her position of celebrity to do good.
Hi, I'm Georgina and I work for an arts charity in London. And the woman who inspires me is Hillary Clinton, because during the American election she stayed graceful under an unbelievable amount of fire, and she has shown through the years that she is adaptable and willing to change as the times change around her.
Okay, so the woman I'm going to choose is Viola Davis, because I think the way that she turned her career around is so inspirational. She's a dark-skinned black woman with natural hair who started her career in what most actresses and actors are told is too late in their day. She's the wrong colour, she's the wrong look, she's been told she looks too masculine, her acting is overdramatic, that she's portraying a stereotype. So I think what she's done is so inspirational, and the fact that she uses her platform really well to communicate and have really powerful conversations about black hair, black women's sexuality, representation, I think it's so important. When she talks about diversity and inclusion on the platform that she has, it really reaches people on a wider scale.
Hi, I'm Hannah Phillips. I work in politics, and my woman of the world is my mum. My father died when I was young, and she raised me and my sister. I think we turned out all right, and she's a very she's an inspiration to me my whole life. So she's my woman of the world.
Hi, my name is CJ, and my woman of the world is Marie Curie, because she was an extraordinary scientist who changed the world for the better.
So my woman of the world is my grandmother, and that perfect matriarch gives, every time I walked into that house, she had hundreds of grandchildren, and she gave the same amount of love and interest to every single one of those people. She had strong faith and strong views, but would never put anyone down, and was very welcoming and very open, and every time I think about her, I have the biggest smile on my face. And I do feel like sometimes when I'm at my lowest, I imagine her literally like telling me what to do and holding me up, and she's not around any longer, but yeah, she's a wonderful woman, and that's an amazing legacy.
Hi, my name's Izzy, and I work in media in central London, and the woman that inspires me is my friend Holly Webb, who's just won a Olympic gold medal in Rio. She has now used her position across media, social media, to encourage women in sport to get involved, and is doing a fantastic job.
Basically, the woman that I admire most is Angela Davis. I'm going to see her tomorrow. But the reason why I admire her is because she's the one that actually got me through my education. I studied criminology, so I could cite her in a lot of my essays. And she was one of the only women of colour who I feel like expressed a true opinion and wasn't scared to go against the grain and say what she felt about the establishment, especially in terms of the criminal justice system.
Thanks to everyone who has just shared their Woman of the World. Shannon and I have now been to a panel talk, which was called Women, Power and Change, and they were all discussing what one thing would make the world a fairer place for women and girls. So we're going to play you an extract. The speakers are Jude Kelly, who is the Artistic Director of the South Bank Centre, and Michael Kimmel, who is a Professor of Sociology and Gender Studies.
And this is the key thing for me. I'm old enough to know that the gender equality movement has had fits and starts. It's come up against extraordinary things that it needed to change legislatively, and often that has been a global thing. Getting the vote is an example. And then there have been moments of action around specific themes and topics and ideas. There have also been waves, as we've called them. But in my lifetime, I don't remember a moment when the visceral energy of girls and women right across the globe is guiding them and sending them towards a space of recognising power and justice. I don't remember that being the case before. And that, I think, presents us with a number of extraordinary opportunities, as well as things that we have to think about very deeply. I think in WOW, we are learning language in order to help shape argument, but we have to keep on going back to the beginning of language as well with others and saying, tell me how I'm speaking of this, and is this actually inadvertently a language of exclusion, even though I'm intending it to be including? So one of the things I suppose I'm asking for everybody all weekend, whether you're here just for today or whether you're coming for the whole festival, which is, my God, some stamina, is to seek out the sessions that you are least familiar with in terms of themes and ideas. Have the courage to ask people about, you know, something that would be different for them.
It is absolutely, without question, true that what we know is that we cannot fully empower women and girls unless we engage boys and men. Period. Full stop. There has never been a reform that women wanted that didn't require men's support. Name one. Vote. Right? So we know we have to engage men. Why should men engage with this, or how do we think about this? Typically, the way I think we do, we should think about it. In fact, the only reason we should think we should support gender equality is because it's right. Because it's fair, because it's just, because it's democratic. We all know this. This is, and a really good example of this is Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada. When he became prime minister in 2015, many of you know this, he named half of his cabinet to be women. And he was asked by a kind of critical journalist, like, why did you do that? And his answer, some of you may remember, was, because it's 2015. Because it's right, it's fair, it's just, it's normal. Right? So that is where we start. That should be our response.
I hope you enjoyed that clip from Women, Power and Change. Now over to Shannon.
Okay, so I've managed to grab the amazing Gemma Kearney, radio host, book author, panelist, activist. Gemma, how are you doing?
I'm all right, pretty tired.
I bet.
I'm really enthused.
You are all over this festival. You're doing two things, right? Do you want to fill us in?
I'm doing two things. So I'm hosting a rally later on, which is free for people to come to, because the thing is about WOW is that it sells out really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't necessarily promote enough is that you can just come to the South Bank, hang out and see what's going on. You can walk through the South Bank Centre still and hear amazing stuff in the Claw Ballroom. So the rally is kind of like that. It's like anyone... You know me, I love a party, so anyone's invited. And we're going to be showcasing some of the best things that are happening here at WOW. So we've got a girls' rock choir. We've got June Eric Idori, who I mentor, who's an amazing writer.
Well, actually, you're in ASOS Magazine right now with June, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
So for those of you who haven't got a copy of our latest issue, we did a feature on mentoring. And, yeah, Gemma's mentoring an amazing girl called June, who I think she was just in an L Activist of the Year award
or something. Yeah, she won L Activist of the Year. She's only 18. So
incredible.
She's pretty impressive. I mean, the fact that I mentor her is absolutely ridiculous. She asked me, I said yes, because it meant that I got to pick her brains, because her brain is extraordinary and way more advanced than mine.
She mentors you, you mentor her. Shout out, June.
And actually, I was just about to sing, we are family, because it feels like it's a bit of a family, you know, these kind
That's
of things
so nice.
Where, you know, we're doing that in the ASOS magazine, and she's here, and I met her at WOW, you know, all these lovely kind of cycles, and that's what WOW is. It's like this ecosystem of the best women ever, talking about stuff that they really, really believe in, and... You know, that engages all genders, all people, all races, and even on a global platform, that is an inspiring thing, because WOW is now global too.
Yeah, it's all over the world, and it's all over the UK as well. They're off to Bradford and all sorts
I'm going to Hull tomorrow.
Are you doing, like, the WOW tour then?
Yeah, so I basically have gone bananas, because the last few days is insane. I launched my book on Thursday.
Yes, we want to talk about that.
Open, a toolkit for how magic and messed up life can be. It is like a huge...
I love the title.
...bursting... It's massive. It weighs over a kilogram. It's like giving birth. Fully illustrated, full colour. It's divided into your heart, your mind, your body and soul, your world and your future. So it's got a lot in there. Launch that on a Thursday, at a big party, a right old rave up. Mel C came.
Yes!
Spoiled case, my party.
Oh,
I'm
my
so
God,
happy.
That's amazing.
Literally, I'm so happy. And then... Got on the train this morning, put on my sequins.
And here she is.
And it's my third official launch. So after I've done the rally this afternoon, I'm going to be in conversation with one of my favourite women, Lauren Laverne, in the Royal Festival Hall. And I cannot wait to see her.
And you guys have known each other for ages, haven't you? How did you first meet?
I was thinking about this earlier, and I feel like I owe Lauren a lot. She's so generous with her kind of spirit and fun and wisdom and... She's really an open person, like.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that when we first met, and I thought it was Glastonbury, because when I first started working at Glastonbury, that was part of the BBC family, it was very overwhelming, because I was just like a little gangly, like 24-year-old, being asked to do live telly at Glastonbury, Glastonbury was my favourite festival, but I used to be like rolling around it, let alone like I've got a microphone and I'm here as a roving reporter. And she was always so... funny and cool to hang out with. We have like a makeup Winnebago. Lauren Laverne is one of the badasses chicks in broadcast.
Oh, that is so nice. It sounds like you've always been surrounded by loads of amazing women, and now you're also, you know, you've been mentored by people like Lauren Laverne, and now you're going on to do it with people like June. Who else do you want to shout out?
Well, the thing
in
is,
in the spirit of WOW,
the secret is that women are amazing.
Oh, it's no secret.
But all women have such amazing, complex, brilliant, themselves, you know, like they just, everyone's different. Everyone's got different things to offer, and I love that. And I think, you know, in terms of shout out, obviously Lauren is loved by many. June is an up and coming star, and that's, I feel so privileged and so humble in my life that I've met like my heroes and people that I think are just truly incredible. But I do also believe that your heroes are in your best mates, they're in your family, they're in your workplace, they're in your place of education. You know, like, look around, stick together, be kind to each other, and always big up and your female mates and your female family members. There are so many awesome women. Like, in my book, there's, like, a page that you can just write your idols. And I did the same. I did it on one page, and then on the other page, you can write in your own. And
is that like important to you that it's quite interactive, the book?
Yeah, I really wanted people to be able to just, even though it's really colourful and got loads of personality, I wanted people to feel like they could totally get involved in the party.
Aww.
And yeah, so the idols is like a firework of idols. So I got the illustrator to just leave gaps. So imagine if you like, you could just have like a firework with people's names. And in there, I've got like the Slits, who I found like later,
so
really.
Cool.
Like, I wasn't into them like years ago, but I got dragged up on stage one night when Ari Up, who was the lead singer of the Slits, was still alive. And she got all these girls up on stage at a festival, and I was like dancing around like, these girls are incredible. And I've since met Viv Albertine, and I've kind of followed like their history, because just the fact that they were just such progressive punks in a really male time, basically.
Yeah.
They definitely became some people that I was so interested in, like like X-Ray Specs. It kind of leads on after that, and that, so
yeah, Viv Albertine would definitely be on my firework.
Yeah, she's incredible. So the Slits are in there. Erykah Badu,
oh, queen,
who's just a queen. And if you don't know who Erykah Badu is, loads of you that do will be like, of course, she's the best person in the world. But if you don't, you just need to seek her out like ASAP, because her tunes are banging, firstly, and then you'll just get totally lured into like Badu world, and you'll become a Baduist. And recently it was the 11 years of her debut. Not 11, don't know where 11 came from. 20 years of her album Baduism, the first album. And the reason why I said 11 is because I interviewed her in 2011.
Aww.
And we remade the doc that we originally made. And it was so nice to just like go back to that fangirlness and just realise just how epic she is. She's like a doula and has supported and assisted like the birth of over 40 babies.
What?
Just so many things about this woman.
That is crazy. She's one of those people who you don't understand how she doesn't run out of time. She does so much.
She's incredible.
Oh, that's so cool. I read an interview with her child, her son, with Andre 3000, and he was saying, he was like, my parents are just so weird, and it's amazing. I love how weird they are.
I really am fighting to not be that weird for like my one day kids, but I feel like I am going to be that.
It's an amazing quality. Oh, I love that. So what else is in your book? So you've talked about it's kind of interactive, so it's split into these sections. Like, where did the idea come from? How did you, because it's such a big task, right? How did you deal with it?
The thing is, I really love chatting and communicating, and I really love people. So I've been spending a lot of years like clogging up with like the fact that some things are really upsetting and unjust. And one of those things was that I felt like there was becoming more and more of a disconnect with the younger generation and adults, and that we're just all being overwhelmed, and that, you know, the facts where you look at statistics of mental health issues soaring, and you think about what's going on politically on a global scale. So I went into schools. Just a lot of the projects I do are kind of, this sounds really, really annoying and pretentious, but they're quite organic. So I was here at South Bank Centre for Day of the Girl. They do pod montouring on the wheel on the South Bank, so the huge Millennium Wheel.
Pod montouring?
So you go in the pod.
Yeah.
And then you have 2 minutes to chat to an amazing schoolgirl.
That's so cool.
And like, my pod had a female pilot in there.
Oh.
Zandra Rhodes.
That's incredible.
Dawn O'Porter. And then all the girls like had like 5 minutes of us, and we just like looked over the whole of London.
Wow.
And chatted. And
beautiful.
I felt so happy to speak to some of the young girls that day. And even though I've been on Radio 1 for a long time, I said to Jude, like, I feel so inspired today. I was like, I have a platform where I speak to over 1 million people every week on Radio 1 Weekend Breakfast Show, but I don't feel like I'm actually, like, having a conversation. Like, I'm speaking,
it's
like,
one
to
way.
Them.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice when we get callers and stuff, but like, I want to just get out there. I said, will you commission my production company to make a short film where I go to schools all around the country, just almost as a research project, to find out like what was really, like, what was affecting young women. And I just devised a really, really simple workshop to have a conversation. And what came out of it was just so igniting. Stuff that you'd expect, but also just how articulate, amazing, engaged, cool, funny, smart these women were, young women, and they just didn't necessarily seem to realise. And there were certain subject matters that I felt like they never got the opportunity to talk about. So stuff like, some of it's quite serious, you know, like some Year 9 students talking for an hour about self-harm and how it was such a phenomenon in their school and they were really worried about it. The teacher never even knew that that was going on. Academic pressure, mental health issues, perfectionism, body image. And it was what I expected, but it was worse.
Right.
And what was amazing was the conversation. The fact that we got to open up, like, they would email me and say, we talked all afternoon about some of the stuff that we brought up together. And then we directed the film so that it's not me, like, on a sense of discovery. It was about the girls. It's called Wow Now.
Damn,
and you can find it on YouTube. Just put Wow Now, Gemma Kearney. It's 7 minutes. And the girls are so cool. And after that, I was like, I have to do something. And I don't know what it's going to be yet. So I started doing kind of think tanks with amazing women that I know. I had an office above a pub in North London, and I invited like an MP, Joe Swinson, who was a Lib Dem MP at the time, came to this gig venue in an afternoon. I put on a platter and we did like some brainstorming. You know, there was lots of different women there, creative women, poets, but governmental people that put together This Is England, people that do global stuff around the world, like empowering women in Africa. And we just kept trying to come up with what the thing was, like, what could we do? What can we do to make people feel more empowered? And then just all of a sudden, that same pub, I saw someone that I knew who had helped my friend get a book deal. And I said, and at the same time, like, I was turning 30, and I was being very reflective about my 20s and my life and things I wish I could have told myself and how many experiences that I had. And I just was like, I've got this idea, like, I think I want to write a book to my younger self. And it's not just to me, because there's so many things going on that are new and that I'm really worried about. And then Macmillan were the ones, like, they were my crew. Like, they let me talk about the bus from the first meeting. And then we started to build it. I call it building a book rather than writing it, because it's just such a collaboration. Yeah. Like, I've interviewed people in there. I commissioned people to write certain excerpts, so there's stuff that I didn't know about. I got organisations to contribute, you know. The illustrations are, in their own right, incredible, like, and phenomenal. So it's so many different things, but it was painstaking. It took me a year. It felt like I was giving birth. I cried a lot. My heart hurt a lot because I care about it so much. And now it's here.
And it's out.
So
it's out
the party
now.
Time now.
Gemma, thank you so much. We're so excited to read it and cover to cover. And
thank you for letting me spill my guts, my
thank
beans. I've got
you.
A lot to say, but I'm really, really, really excited and proud. And anyone listening, like, welcome to Team Open. Like, it really, it's going to be fun.
Oh, big well done.
Cheers.
Okay, so I'm joined by the amazing Tanya D, who's literally just got off stage, as in you were performing about 3 minutes ago,
yeah,
right?
That's right, yeah.
How are you feeling? That was amazing.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sweaty. My hands are very sweaty.
Good.
Yeah, but like pumped. Like, you know, when you come off stage and like, ah!
Yeah.
So
adrenaline.
Yeah, no, I'm really,
I bet.
I'm so, really good moods, yeah.
Good. Yeah. So Tanya is one of three stars in Offside. Can you tell us a little bit about the play?
Yeah, sure. So Offside is a play about women's football. It tells a story of Mickey and Keely, who are rivals at the start but become friends at the end. And it's basically about their struggle to get onto the England team, to be picked for the women's England team. And it covers many things to do with, you know, what women might go through to try and get on the team, and amongst other things, like, there's loads of issues.
Yeah, it's really interesting because you kind of cover different centuries, don't you?
Yeah.
And like all how women have used football as this kind of resistance for a really long time. Was there anything interesting that you learned about it, any like historical players that really inspired you?
Yeah, so I don't want to say too much, but basically there's one character that I play called Carrie as well, and she she's based on a real person from 1881. She's called Carrie Boosted. She was the first female black Scottish footballer that's been recorded. So for me, that was
amazing.
Like a huge... Yeah, being... I am mixed race. So yeah. For me, I was like, wow, this is amazing. So when I researched about it, you know, in that time, just, you know, so many things. She's black.
Yeah.
She's a woman. You know, the culture, the social class system at that time was just... So researching that was amazing. And, yeah, it was, that's yeah. been one of my favourite things
she
learning about her.
She sounds really
she's a
badass.
Powerful woman. Yeah. Yeah.
And you're part of a group called Futures Theatre.
Yeah.
How did you discover them? Can you tell me a little bit about Future? Future? Futures? Futures.
Futures, yeah. How did I discover Futures?
Yeah.
They're a well-known theatre company. Mm-hmm. They're quite well-established. I personally have been following them for about 5 or 6 years now. So I was quite over the moon to be working with them. And... how I got involved was I saw Sabrina Mahfouz, who was the writer of the play. She put an article on Twitter. I read the blurb and I was like, ah, this is me. Like, this is a play about... I'd love to do this play. She's literally writing a play about me and I want to do it. So I wrote to them. They said, you know, come and have an audition. And that's it, really. I got involved with them and Caroline's been amazing. They're a great, great theatre company. Now, all of their work is to promote fairness for women and girls. You know, that's what they're about, really. So this play is perfect for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you show, again, don't want to give too much away, but you do some pretty cool footy skills in the play. Had you ever played football before?
No.
Did a rehearsal involve a lot of learning about the game?
Yeah, it did.
I wish I could play
football.
So
we've had a really extensive, like, two-hour session every morning.
Sick.
With a ball. and training hard. Like, we're sweating by 12 o'clock between, you know, 10 and 12. We do lots of football training, and we've had someone come in, really amazing guy called Kemu, who's come in and showed us what to do with the ball, and just
so cool.
He spent a lot of time doing it, and it was really frustrating at first because it's hard. Like, for me, coming from a dancing background as well, I'm quite on my feet and up and la la la, and football is very grounded, and you've got to be really focused. The detail, the stuff that I didn't even think about, like, you know, just to... how to stop a ball, which sounds really simple, but it's not. It's like, whoa, I got to...
Yeah, not when it's going at high speeds.
It wiggles around everywhere, yeah. So, and you got to really, like, focus and be in the zone with it. It's like, yeah, you have to really connect with it. And that's another learning experience for us all, I think, yeah.
So you're an actress and dancer, and I'm sure you've performed at loads of amazing places. What's cool about putting on Offside for Women of the World? What's nice about doing it at this particular festival?
It's funny because I read a tweet this morning that was just like, it's a funny tweet. It just said, so happy to be surrounded by feminists for a whole week. And I mean, that's quite a strong statement, but, you know, I think people know when they see WOW what to expect. You know, it's a festival that empowers women, and it's, you know, to educate everyone, men, women, children. Like, I looked around the play, there's a few men, there's lots of children.
There was a little baby in the front row.
Yeah, a little baby in the front. And it's really nice that, you know, this is where we are now, is that we're trying to educate in a different way. And, you know, the South Bank and WOW are throwing it, you know, trying to pull people in to educate about, you know, fairness, equality.
Yeah.
Because it's still a huge subject.
We're
not,
of course.
You know,
there's still a way to go.
Yeah, there's still a way to go. Still a long way to go. So the play, you know, definitely reflects that. Where we're coming from,
it's really,
and where we are now. And actually, we do still have a long way to go.
And how can people get involved if they're not a Women of the World right now? Because Meta, but the performance is just finished. What have you guys got coming up?
So what are the shows that's coming up?
Yeah.
So we've got 2 weeks of rehearsal left. And then we are going, I think we've got Harrogate first, and then we're at Omnibus. So the best thing to do is to go online, go onto the Futures Theatre website, have a look on there. All the dates are on there. And just get in touch, get involved, tweet us, say hi to us on social media. That's
perfect.
The best thing to do.
Well,
yeah, come
everyone,
and see the show.
Yeah, everyone needs to get down and
come
see
and
it.
See it, yeah.
And now, Tanya, you're going to give us a little taster, aren't you?
Yes.
So we have persuaded Tanya to perform a little bit from the play for us. Can you just give a little kind of... whereabouts does this happen? What's just happened? A little bit of context.
Okay, so Mickey and Keeley, they have a big match tomorrow. Sadly, Keeley's not quite in the zone. And Mickey's quite a strong character. She doesn't like to show vulnerability. But at this point, she's trying to say, right, Keeley, you've got to snap out of this. We've got a big match tomorrow. Here is something that I'm afraid of. So I won't read all of it because I don't want to give too much away. But I'll read up to a point, yeah.
Perfect, let's do it.
Cool. They remind me that it's never just the game. the scrutiny, the questions. I always knew what people would say about me, the way I look, what I wear, my hair, the way I talk, my build, so manly, my body. I thought it would break me, seeing my body on screen, being talked about, being seen. When I hear them bringing how I look, how any of us look, but especially me, when I hear them bringing that into it, I feel sick, physically sick. It will never just be about our play. Not in our lifetime anyway. But I'm doing it. Because we have to. We owe it to others who come before us, who put us before themselves. We owe it to ourselves.
Woo!
Oh, thanks.
I've got goosebumps. That was amazing. Tanya, thank you so much for coming
and chatting
with us. Everyone, get down and see Offside.
Thanks.
Right, so Tanya's left me to go and play some more football, and we're going to be hearing from another panel talk. So this talk is called Women, Mental Health and the Art of Feeling Better. And you're going to hear Adwoa Aboah, who is this incredible model and also founder of Girls Talk, an online platform where women can come together and share their feelings and their experiences. The other voice you'll hear is Kerry Jenkins, and she's created something called Recharge and Resist, which is a movement of self-care for activists and campaigners.
I mean, I definitely have to take a moment every now and then to realise that I must practice what I preach.
Yeah.
And I, you know, even something as simple as picking up the phone and calling a friend, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I haven't done that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm dealing with this by myself, but I know that a lot of my struggles have always been down to codependency and finding it much easier to help others than myself. But yeah, and I don't know where that pressure comes from. Is it somewhere? Is it our own pressure, or is it something from the outside world? I don't know.
Reaching out.
Yeah, my ex-boyfriend always used to say this thing. He said he used to go, "Stop being mean to my girlfriend," and it was because the things I used to say to myself.
Yeah.
I would never dream of saying that to a stranger or my, you know, a family friend or my best friend or my sister, but my head used to tell me the worst things about myself. And it is still like a constant battle. I have to work every day on that self-care and that self-love. That self-love, like, most importantly.
I think it's, when we're talking about self-care and looking after ourselves, I think it's quite important to remember that that's going to look different for everyone as well. Whilst a lot of people might find mindfulness useful, and I certainly have, you know, when we think of self-care, we might think of a hot bath or a nice cup of tea or something, but actually it could be something which we personally wouldn't see ourselves benefiting from. You know, it could be going to a mixed martial arts class or something, or it could be something that to other people looks like really hard work, and you'll think, well, why are they doing that? Because they need to sit down and stop, you know. But actually that might help someone feel better about where they are, or it could just be ceasing to do anything at all. So I think that it's important that we bear in mind not to normatize what care looks like for people, and not to put judgment on people for how they deal with it. We can help in terms of being there for them, but remove judgment. You know, if it doesn't work for you, that's fine, but it's probably going to work for someone else.
So that was a clip from the panel talk, Women, Mental Health and the Art of Feeling Better. Now we've also got the help of Naomi, who's one of our writers on the magazine. She's been with us all weekend. Let's go see who she's found to talk to. Over to Naomi.
Naomi here at the Women of the World Festival, and I'm joined by Rachel Long of the Octavia Poetry Collective. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, good. It's a really beautiful place to be in today.
Yeah. And you're getting ready to perform this evening.
Yes.
Your poetry version of The Handmaid's Tale, is that right?
That is right, yes.
So would you like to tell us a bit of the background to that performance and how that's going to work? So obviously it's a long, scary novel.
It is,
in book form.
It is.
But the version of it you guys are going to do...
It's going to be abridged. So we first were invited by the South Bank Centre to respond to The Handmaid's Tale for the London Literature Festival, Lark's October.
Okay.
And Margaret Atwood was actually speaking, and it was all the themes were about time travel and dystopian futures or past, which The Handmaid's Tale definitely concerns itself with. So... how you make a novel and how you break it down and how you respond to it poetically. I sort of cut up the book. The book's written in really brilliant sections.
Yeah.
So I assigned each poet of Octavia a section, and they were completely allowed to respond, if it was like a word or a line or an image, to anything within that chapter. So each chapter is summed up with a poem.
By a different person.
By a different person, yes.
And so you're kind of representing the storyline.
Yes.
So do you want to kind of summarise what happens?
Yeah, so the way, when you retell something poetically, I didn't even know how that was going to work, really. But what happens is when they start to get knitted back together again, and when they're put together, is that you do start to hear the story, and that you can still, I hope, and I do believe it is the case, you can still, you're included in the story, even if you haven't read it. You can still be taken along with the storyline.
You can pick it up from the poems.
Yeah.
And it's quite a few years old, isn't it, The Handmaid's Tale? I think some people read it for A-level.
Yes, they did.
But basically, it's a kind of horrifying description of like what life could be like without feminism and without... It's a dystopian means that everything's gone wrong and it's really horrible, basically.
Yes.
It's all based on things that have actually all happened in different times and different cultures, right?
Yes, definitely.
So why are you doing that book in 2017? What's the kind of resonance, or what's the context for that?
I think the scariest thing for me about that novel is the fact that it's imagined in the future. So even though you said that it's all about past cultures and about the subjugation of women and how that happened before, how that could still happen again, I think that's what the scariest thing is.
Yeah, that we could go backwards.
That we can go backwards, yeah. So in doing it now in 2017, and specifically a woman of colour poetry collective responding to it, really does I think, puts a new lens on what we need to be careful of as a society.
Can you tell me a little bit more about Octavia Poetry Collective? Did you start out at the South Bank, or you're quite connected to this place, is that right?
We are, yes. This place feels like home, which is a really beautiful thing to have this as feeling like home. So, yes, we started at the South Bank Centre. Bea Colley, a brilliant literature coordinator here, agreed for us to have space here. So we meet once a month.
And did you all, is it all you and people you knew, or did it, how did you build up the group, and how
was,
many of you are there?
There are 17 of us.
Yeah.
They were all women that I had met on the London poetry scene, and whose work I had fallen in love with. And then so we started to meet here monthly, and then we were invited to do Women of the World last year, just upstairs in the poetry library.
Poetry is like a bit little niche interest in some ways, right?
Yes.
So can you like tell me a little bit about your fans and your your supporters and who's interested? It's kind of quite cool, right?
Yes, I think it's a niche, but I do think it's growing. I think it's becoming more accessible, and I think people are also opening up to the possibilities of poetry. Like, it's being used in different ways than it was traditionally. It's not something that's excluded and only kind of done at universities and kind of in some really dry kind
in
of recital
dusty,
hall.
Dusty
place
library. Where no one
yeah.
goes.
Exactly. It's been
it's
taken into,
out.
Into galleries, into car parks, or it's on adverts now, you know. It's been used to even sell things. Who'd have thought that anyone would buy anything that poetry was selling? But they are, and it is. And I think that's a stunning thing.
Wicked. And you're going to now perform a little... section, a little taste from the tonight's performance. So do you want to introduce the poem?
Yeah, sure.
And go ahead.
So it's called Factory Setting of the Body, and it's a displacement cento. And a cento is a Greek word for patchwork, and it's a collection of all of our lines from all of the poems we'd written put together, edited, and put together in some order. So this is a patchwork of Octavia's work.
Oh, amazing.
Factory setting of the body. An uncut woman is the build-up to a beat drop. The grace before the feast, the beginning of something beautiful. I think the scar healed wrong. I heard skin has a memory of its past life. The council flat you're a girl inside has had its doors fixed now. Fears of someone climbing in while you were trying to dream. Maybe yours cracked like logs on an Indian fire. Rediscover the clothes you tied up in a refuge bag 7 years ago. The batteries all dashed from the clock and the blinds shut tight. You can't hide under the bed if you're top bunk. Eldest, lay closest to heaven. The doctor needs to open you up. They wonder how you made something of yourself deep under the concrete. Without wincing, you told them of the paths you travelled on Sunday evenings, your body bursting at the seams between your armpits, along your eyelids, take me back, written across your forehead. You have two homes now. They both stay up late. Like a good lover, they whisper things like, maybe you are the monster. Lately, in your mouth, the word, ha, ha. It feels awkward to use your full name. It is extinguishes crying, blood and glitter.
Thank you so much. That was beautiful.
You're welcome. Yeah, and that's not mine. That's, an Octavia patchwork of all of us.
Oh, well, thanks so much. Are you excited about the performance? You get nervous?
I am super nervous, but excited as well. And they're always so brilliant. I don't know why I worry. The minute they finish, I'm just like, why do you always worry? Why do you do this each time? They are so incredible. And yeah, they'll completely smash it tonight.
Oh, well, I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to come and share your poetry and tell us a bit about yourself.
No,
thank you.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thanks. Hiya, it's Naomi here at Women of the World Festival. I'm joined by Callie Thorpe and Stephanie Yeboa, who have just literally now come out of their panel talk discussing plus-size fashionistas and other issues facing kind of plus-size people as well as fashion. Is that a fair description, ladies?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So it was quite a kind of emotional, moving and uplifting talk. You covered quite a lot of subjects. Can you just both introduce yourself and say kind of what your roles are?
You go, Steph.
So I'm Stephanie Yeboa. I am a plus-size style blogger and body positivity activist, and I like to discuss things to do with diversity and body shapes within plus-size fashion, as well as show off what I'm wearing on a day-to-day basis as well.
Some nice outfit picks.
Yeah.
And some serious discussion. And Kelly?
I'm also a London-based style blogger, and I'm also a plus-size fashion columnist for Marie Claire. And I write about all sorts of subjects, but lots of style and travel, beauty, a bit of everything really.
Cool, thank you. So when I was listening to the talk, I was thinking, in terms of the fashion industry and the body positive movement, that people like yourselves have set up
your blogs under your own initiative, no one's asked you to do that, and you've kind of built up organically quite a big community of body positive followers and your kind of readership. And it seems to me that like magazines and brands are kind of a bit behind the curve maybe on this issue, and they're trying to now catch up a bit and trying to buy into some of your insight, and obviously your big customer base, your readers. What do you think about that? And do you think that your plus size people are getting a bit more exposure in the fashion industry and at the moment?
I mean, I definitely think we're seeing more plus size women in the fashion industry, but I think currently we're still seeing the same type of plus size woman in the fashion industry, which is the acceptable version of plus size. So lots of hourglass figures, big boobs, slim stomachs, big bum, you know, beautifully authentic Jessica Rabbit style women with what is deemed as like the acceptable plus size. But I think we should talk about the positive as well, and that, and yes, I think more brands are coming on board with the fact that they need to be more relatable and their customer base isn't just a small woman. All women buy clothes, and I think they've realised there is money to be made from selling clothes to said women. And I like to think that the plus size bloggers and writers and activists are encouraging conversation to help brands and magazines and the media follow suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with what Callie said. I think what's good about us bloggers is that there is an authenticity there, there's a subjectivity there. We kind of cut through the BS, we're very raw, we're very unapologetically us. And I think overall consumers kind of relate to us. I think there's the relatability as well that we have. So people can...
You're speaking to people that maybe haven't been sort of targeted or felt that they're being represented or spoken to in the past.
Exactly. Or, you know, people could, somebody can log onto a blog and just see somebody that represents them or somebody that looks like them and say, you know, if this person can wear this outfit, maybe I can too. And it's not just the, you know, socially acceptable plus size person that can wear it, this person who is a size 24, 26 can wear it too. And I think that's where, in terms of our appeal as bloggers, that's how we appeal to sort of the mass consumers.
The mass media.
So do you think that maybe starting from now that we're going to see kind of maybe a second generation of bigger women being represented, if you think of people like, is it Ashley Graham that was on Vogue?
Ashley Graham was on Vogue, yeah, which was a great, a big step. Also, she was the front of Sports Illustrated. So it's definitely make, there's baby steps happening. I think we should call them baby steps, because
it needs to branch out even more.
We're, in terms of progression, there's a long way to go, but we shouldn't discredit the things that have happened and how positive those are. When a young girl sees someone that isn't, I mean, I guess growing up in the 90s, I only saw a version of every woman looking like Kate Moss or Britney Spears. So, and literally. I mean, even if you think about all the teen movies you saw that same kind of vibe all across that. And I guess now, I think the idea is that the girls, I mean, I'm talking to girls of all sizes, are able to see like a variety of different body shapes, so they can just be like, actually, you know, my friend looks like this, my mum looks like this, my sister looks like this. You know, we're all different, all of us come in different shapes and sizes, and we should normalise that, because not everyone looks one specific way. So
exactly.
And Steph, as a woman of colour, you were saying in the talk that that's kind of even more of an underrepresented demographic.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was growing up in the 90s, the only people that I had to look up to, or person I had to look up to, was perhaps like Missy Elliott, who's in the States, and she was like,
she has
the only
amazing style, it must be said.
I mean, she's amazing. She's just so
legend.
She's just such a legend, like her dance moves, her music and all of that. But she was really the only person I had to look up to, and there was nobody else. And to be in a position now where we've got social media, where we've got bloggers, and we've got, you know, girls who are 13, 14 years old who now have, I guess, not specifically, you know, celebrities, but people who are in within the social media who they can look up to, who look like them and say, oh, this blogger looks like me and I can wear that. I think we need to definitely increase that, and
keep
like Callie said
that.
There was a long way to go in terms of you know, being diverse and just everybody feeling represented as well.
So talking about needing to see more representation and maybe starting on Instagram, who are some good people to follow right now that you might have recently discovered or you've been a long time fan of? Who's a good inspo follow on Instagram?
There's a lady from Detroit called Leah Vernon, who is amazing.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's Muslim, she's black, she's really representing for like plus size women who are also Muslim as well. She was recently over here for a few days and I got to meet her, and she's just an incredible positive woman, and her dress sense is just completely like out of this world. She's amazing, so she's like a really good person, I think. Cool. That's really making waves as well.
Yeah, I actually was going to say, I forget the other amazing girl's name, I completely forget, but I think she's Danish, you know, the one that dresses in power suits all the time. Why can't I remember her name?
Dressing Outside the Box?
Dressing Outside the Box.
Yeah.
She is absolutely amazing. Like, she does plus size from like a masculine like really aspect. Androgynous.
Yeah.
And she just absolutely kills it. Every time I go on her page, I'm like, oh, amazing.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the ASOS model that is on there. Brielle, her name is.
Is that Brielle?
Brielle.
Okay, then.
She's actually in the UK now shooting with ASOS, and she is such an amazing, lovely person. I did a campaign with her last year in New York for IME with Evans, and she was the model used, and she is a black plus size model, and I think she's making waves in the industry. She's just beautiful, and yeah, it's just really inspiring. Also, just lots of body positive people, like Body Positive Panda. She's really cool.
Well, I've seen her. She's got rainbow hair, haven't she?
Yeah, she's really
so lovely
sweet as well.
So sweet.
And she really champions like speaking out about subjects people don't feel comfortable about, and she's not a person that's body positive only to an extent. She actually talks about positivity across the board, and she's actually ace, so I really like her as well.
That sounds great. And very, very important subject we haven't tackled yet, which obviously is shopping.
Yeah.
We're coming into a tiny bit of spring weather and a bit of rays of sunshine, so what are you both looking to add to your basket right now?
I love my mesh. Yeah, I'm in that sort of period at the moment where I'm just trying to be unapologetically me and just show off as much as me as possible and just be proud in my weight and things like that. And I feel like, yeah, I just love a bit of mesh, man.
This is a podcast, so you can't unfortunately see what Steph is wearing, but she's head to toe in black with some black jeans and a mesh
ASOS Perf jeans
bodysuit under a kind of nice long line leopard print jacket. So she's pretty working it here at the South
Bank. Thank you.
I am loving deconstructed items in gingham.
From gingham from ASOS as well.
I got it in, I put it in my basket literally as it went out, but I really like gingham, and I guess I'm still really into frills at the moment and oversized like sleeves and like exaggerated shapes. I'm really, really into mules at the moment. Like I just want to get lots of coloured mules to wear.
Yeah, lovely. And maybe some like gold or silver ones.
Something like a statement sort of piece. But I love springtime like clothing, because you can sort of like just wear a light jacket April 23rd.
Just wear a light MAC and leave your puffer jacket at home. Leave your hats and scarves at home.
No, exactly.
Oh, ladies, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet both of you and chat to you. And thank you so much for being here.
No, thanks for having us. We love ASOS.
Thank you.
Team ASOS Curve.
Okay, so we're back at Women of the World, and Annie and I have just managed to grab Debree Stevenson, who we're excited about. Debree, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing at Women of the World? Because I know you'll explain it better than us, and it's very, very cool.
So I'm doing a special one-off edition version of my show, Poet in the Corner, which is called Gal in the Corner, especially for WOW. And Poet in the Corner basically is an ode to grime and to Dizzy Rascal, exploring the poetics of grime and breaking down the structure and telling the story of grime in terms of my life, becoming a poet because I found grime at 15 when it was being created around me, becoming a poet, then kind of maybe realising I lived in Nottingham at the time, I needed to go back home and re-find grime. Because it's quintessentially where I found the tools to be who I wanted to be and find all the successes I found, much to my own struggle at times. And it's exploring all the female aspects of the show and of grime, really. So I've got several female collaborators, MCs, producers, poets, and an amazing DJ, so it's kind of pop rave, pop poetry show, pop grime gig, all in one and all female.
Annie here is a recent grime convert.
I was just about to say, this is so great because, convert. I'm like grime super fan now. So I need to learn all about this. I need to know about the history. I need to know about why grime now? Why is it having such a big resurgence?
That's a big question, really. And, I can't talk for grime as a whole thing.
No, okay.
but I can talk in terms of my journey growing up in East London, where, like, the scene between East London and Essex, between, like, 2001 and 2008, when I was at secondary school. And, I went to a school where the only thing we got the highest in was truancy. I saw a boy's ear get bitten off at the bus stop at my school. Success wasn't something we felt that we had ownership over. Yet suddenly you came into school one day, and people were saying, Kano was your friend's cousin. People were saying things your friends were saying. People were articulating your community, your world. And you know what? Like, Garage and Jungle and Drum and Bass, they had been doing that. But I think there was a quintessential rage to grime, which really was attuned to definitely my life experiences. And, I was angry about a lot of things, and I needed someone to articulate that for me. And I needed someone to give me the tools to articulate my experiences, and also to give me the confidence to define success for myself, because it wasn't something that felt openly available to me. I didn't really have friends for a long time, and actually grime was my access to cool as much as it was my access to anything else. But it also, gave me, particularly Dizzy Rascal's album, which so clearly articulated so many narratives, and then won a Mercury, and then when the album actually came out and I didn't have to listen to it on crappy recordings from pirate radio stations anymore, and I could hear those lyrics crystal clear, it was insanely empowering. And sort of going on that journey where maybe people started getting signed, maybe grime stopped being grime for a bit, and I think young people are angry again, in maybe a more global way. And all these, the veterans sort of said, actually, this stuff is still important, making their own labels, making success for themselves. So all those other, I guess, little debris around the country those other boys in the corners, gals in the corners that feel isolated, that feel like they don't have a voice, that feel like success is not available to them, suddenly are being given that toolkit again. And actually are creating a network that isn't just exclusive to London anymore, because, grime really did move into the regions as well, when it sort of receded in London. But now it's international. Just got back from Trinidad. I'll put on Stormzy on YouTube in my workshop, and I've got 16-year-olds spitting all his bars better than me. I've gone to, regional universities, sort of right, in the trees and beautiful foliage of Beirut, and they're telling me that Skepta changed their lives forever. So this stuff is going global, and I think there is an international rage. And I think rage is something that it's not vented enough in the arts, and it's not, rage comes from the same place as fear and sadness often, but maybe we're not given the tools to process it as well.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
I've been schooled.
Annie Grime Queen. Yeah. You mentioned Kano and Stormzy, and obviously Dizzy's been a really, really big influence to you. But you've also been working with loads of amazing females. Yeah. Is that really important to you, to showcase that grime is accessible to girls as well?
Yeah, I think, so important. I think, weirdly, it's been really interesting having conversations about WOW, because for so long, it sounds like a weird thing to say, but I almost wasn't aware that I was a woman. I was female. And I guess, I'm someone that, I'm working really hard at the moment to use gender-neutral pronouns, and it's, gender is a complex, complex thing. But something that really... So I just... When I was in Trinidad, I was doing this tour of 10 schools performing one of the songs that I did at WOW, which is sort of... I did half of that and half of WOW, to hundreds and hundreds of school students in Trinidad. And the amount of young women coming up to me afterwards... A lot of women I'm meeting were saying, I'm scared to walk wherever. And, catcalling, massive, massive issue. Can't walk anywhere without someone shouting something offensive at you somewhere. And all these, literally hundreds of girls coming up to me afterwards and talking to me. And then sort of maybe realising the responsibility on my shoulders in terms of that. And then realising, actually, I ran my own company for 6 years from when I was 20. I was a lecturer at 21 at Nottingham University. I've worked in 24 countries now. And actually realising, for a long time, I maybe asexualised myself because I felt like my femininity was something that inherently undermined my leadership and my skill, you know, which is something a lot of research backs up as well in terms of a qualified woman coming across as like bullshy and overbearing as opposed to skilled if she was perceived as male, you know, and yeah, actually realizing, wow, you know, and you sort of feeling like, you know, I can be sexy, I can be powerful, I can be confident, I can be vulnerable, I can be scared, I can be all those things as a woman. And I think female grime artists, you know, people like Steph London, like just creating such complex narratives now, people like you know, Nadia Rose, Lady Leisha, I just think really showing a different kind of female leadership, and you know, the men in the industry being so behind them in that, I think, you know, and then being feminine and being, you know, being able to be masculine and being able to be powerful and subtle and playful, I think is so fantastic.
And the performance that you've got coming up later, can you give a shout out to some of the people that are going to be involved?
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing artists. I really want to give a special shout out actually to Bams, one of the producers that's worked really hard. She's actually not in the country at the moment, but she produced one of the tracks, especially for our... Also, Yazis, an upcoming producer that produced one of the tracks. We've got AG, who actually was recently mentioned as one of the seven most influential women in grime, an amazing, amazing DJ. And then we've got, I'm doing a collaboration with Trumendous from Birmingham, an amazing poet and lyricist from Birmingham. And then actually Asha X from Leicester and Bridie, also known by her rap battle derivative, Brizzling. And actually Asha and Bridie have never performed in this way before. And I've been working with them a lot. And that's a big part of this project, is working with artists at the top of their career, but also really helping, you know, MCs move into poetry, poets move into lyricism, and really seeing actually... part of that for me is about recognising that grime lyricism has as much academic weight as poetry, you know, and using my academic background and my knowledge of that to say that and say, actually, look, a poet can do this. There's not as big a jump as you might think between these two things, you know. So what's the difference between why are you selecting that thing to go in this AQA anthology and giving that an A grade and not these other things? You know, I think that's a really important blurring for me, because the, you know, the academic barriers often was the difference between someone going to jail and someone going to university where I grew up, you know, and that really vexes me, to be perfectly frank. So I'm trying to break down some of those barriers with this work, but they're going to be absolutely fantastic. I've really enjoyed working with them.
So exciting. And Devri, you're going to give us a little sneak peek, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to introduce the bit that you're going to do?
Yeah. I'll do a section. This is the song that I'm doing with Asha, and obviously it's usually on an instrumental by Raps Katai, and usually with Asha. So I'll just do a little bit of a section from a song called Kuno Ichi, which means female ninja.
Sick.
Yes. Which is the track that I developed. It's actually the only one not based on the Poet in the Corner infrastructure, but it's the one that I developed for WOW and for the gender-based violence tour that I did in Trinidad, so I feel like it's particularly on topic.
Okay, let's hear it.
First things first, if you touch my arm, swear I put my left wrist opportunist. What? Are you a bear? Am I a tuna farm? No. Don't swipe at me, no. Don't DM me, no. If I say I got a man, don't question me, like, no. Don't swipe at me, no. Don't DM me, no. If I say I got a man, don't question me. If I say I got a man and I'm lying to you, what does that mean? I am Groot. Your chat is looser than a Wellington boot. Your face more offensive than Donald Trump's root. Like, don't make me draw for the compact mirror by face. Combat me, symmetric ninjas combat. You hypertensive, battered in combat. Who do that to the children? What court would even let you see them? What court would even let me see them? Shot in these jeans like it's desperate season. Ask you okay when you've bust your reason. Call it a nut, nuts ain't in season. Shout avalanche, more like sneezing. You say D's loyal, I say treason, no. Don't swipe at me, no. Don't DM me, no. If I say I got a man, don't question me, like, no. Don't swipe at me, no. Don't DM me, no. If I say I got a man, don't question me, like, why would you ask to lips me without eye contact, G? You claim impotency, blatantly 6 yards deep.
and that's the ones you didn't keep. You see,
condoms ain't cheap.
Under 25B, that means they're free. You say, just say no. You say, go with the flow. You say, you don't like toes. I say, what are those? No, don't swipe at me. No, don't DM me. No, if I say I got a man, don't question me. If it was easy TV to get my digits, if any man could jump right on it, if slack patience means I'm long in it, so be it. My time ticks in RAM, so I gotta have a filter. Face first, my poorest feature. Nah, not that, not saying it's weak. Our resume crowded without crowd pleasers.
I'll go some of it.
Oh my God. That was great. You smashed it.
The levels in here have just gone like...
Yeah. I can't. There's also loads of passers-by just kind of watching. You've got a little fan group over there. Debree, thank you so much for chatting to us.
Thank you so
much.
It's
amazing
thank
to meet you. Thank you so much.
Have a great wow.
And you.
Okay, so Shan, I feel like my grime education has just gone up a gear.
Yeah, Annie Chin, grime professor, that title is within reach.
Yeah, I'm going to claim it. So let's catch up a bit. You have been getting to a couple of talks that I haven't managed to make it to. You just went to one that you really enjoyed.
Yeah, I went to a really cool one, which was called Badass Feminists from History.
And was that another panel discussion?
Yeah, it was a panel talk. Shall I run through who was on the panel,
yeah,
please? Okay, so it's all kind of broadcasters, journalists, but they had Kira Cochrane, so she's the Guardian opinion editor, and she's recently written a book kind of on that subject where she's explaining the history of like some feminists you might not have heard of.
Right.
Then there was an amazing lady called Shugra Ahmed, who is also a journalist, but she's also the first female elected head of a UK Muslim NGO.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. Fee Rowlett was kind of chairing it. She has, you guessed it, also written a book.
Everyone's written a book.
Yes, hers was on Mary Wollstonecraft, who's a very badass feminist from history. But the extract that I wanted to play is, do you know Kathy Lett?
Tell me about Kathy Lett.
Okay, so she was also on the panel. She's this very hilarious Australian British comedian, and everyone basically had to talk about their ultimate badass feminist from history.
Right.
And she chose Mae West, who was this very glamorous big celebrity in around the 1920s, kind of like a precursor to Marilyn Monroe. Anyway, she talks about her with just such amazing wit and is super inspiring. So this is her telling you why you should love Mae West.
So, yes, Mae West, her wit was so sharp it should have been registered at police headquarters as a lethal weapon. The woman was blessed with this minestrone mix of talent. She was a comedian, singer, dancer, playwright, director, actress, scriptwriter, producer, you know, sex goddess, we know that, and a novelist. If this isn't enough to make any other writer impale herself on her pen, Mae was also a feminist who makes Lady Gaga look like Julie Andrews, an intellectual who rubs shoulder pads with the Roosevelt. I mean, she really did pluck her eyebrows. And a civil libertarian who went to jail in defence of freedom of expression. You probably didn't know that. To cap it all, she was a brilliant businesswoman who insisted on creative control. She refused to sign any Hollywood contract unless it contained a clause that the completed film must in every way be to her satisfaction. Wow. Which is unheard of now. I mean, today, when the only creative muscle exercised by cinema stars is their controlled top pantyhose, and screenwriters are the most put upon of literary prostitutes, you can only marvel at a woman who invented the droit moral in her contracts with Paramount for all the films she wrote. But what makes Mae West so fascinating, or fascinating, as she would say, apart from the fact that she left school at 16. I mean, I left at 12. I mean, I left school at 16. I'm an autodidact. Clearly, it's a word I taught myself. But like Mae, you know, the only examination I've ever passed is my cervical smear test. So she endeared herself to me because of no education. But also, and the fact she left school at 12... And yet she accomplished all of this in an era when women were meant to be no more than decorative and domestic. I mean, Mae West's domesticity was limited to the sowing of wild oats and the barbecuing of sacred cows, entire herds.
Okay.
I'm going to say it. Wow.
Wow.
Wow. What an episode from Wow.
We need a wow count of how many times you said wow this episode.
Yeah, a lot. Well, I think it's been a really good one, right?
It's been a great first episode back for the new series.
Yes, season two.
Very excited, very inspired. Mm-hmm. We've got a long list of thank yous.
A really long list of thank yous. I mean, first, thanks to everyone who told us who their woman of the world is. That was super inspiring. Thanks to Gemma, to Tanya, to Debris, who all spoke to us and did little performances for us.
Thank you to Bea, Collie, who introed everything to WOW and gave us so much detail. Thank you to Callie, Stephanie and Rachel, who Naomi spoke to.
Yes. You can find way more about Women of the World Festival because it's not just their London Festival. They do stuff all over the country, all over the world. For the London one, look up WOW on Southbank Centre, or you can follow them on social media. There's a hashtag WOW London. London doesn't have the vowels, so
no vowels
WOW
with that
LDN.
London.
Or Annie, what's the Twitter? There's a Twitter handle.
The Twitter is WOWTweetUK.
Yes. We're back, so if you like us, don't forget to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Acast, wherever you get your podcasts.
So remember to tune in next episode for more from These Four Walls.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.